tuning in. This is Matt Santos of the Mile High Show, and you are listening to, hey, it's episode number 90, kind of a milestone, a little bit, I guess, for us, creeping up on that 100th episode. We gotta figure out something fun to do for that. We'll see what we can do. But this is episode 90. Now, about a year and a half or so ago, actually about 2 years ago, when I started planning on launching a podcast, I consulted, sat back, and talked with some friends and some folks whose opinions I value, and just to figure out if I wanted to do this, what format of the show, what kind of content. And if you listen to the show on a regular basis, you are either convinced that my friends don't know what they're talking about, or I completely ignored their advice. So it, probably a little bit of both. But one of the persons that I sat and talked with very early on was a former guest of the show. He's been on probably more than anybody else, probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 times, is Mr. Matt Hinshaw. He is a co-worker of mine. We do a lot of work together. He, up until just recently, and we talk a little bit about that, has been a photographer here in the Prescott area for the Prescott Daily Courier. He was laid off recently, and but we talk a little bit about that, and we'll get into that in future episodes, and this is why. When I first started tossing around the idea of the Mile High Show, Matt was one of the guys I talked with, and he was expressing interest in doing a kind of a regular feature of photography advice and tech tips and tricks and hints and all that good stuff. And we have been wanting to do that for quite a while. And like I said, he's been on the show several times, over some panels and some interviews and things. And a few months back, episode, I think it was 56, back in January, Matt, myself, and Tom Hood sat back and talked just photojournalism and swapped some stories. So check the archives at Mile High Show if you want to revisit that episode. But Matt and I have been wanting to do kind of a Q&A show just to talk about gear and, like I said, tricks and tips and just talk about the world of photography and the changing of the industry, specifically mass comm and photojournalism, how I've been involved with it since the early 80s, and he is, 10 years in. So he's seen some changes. I have seen some massive changes, not just in gear and technique, but we have both viewed and observed some changes in ethics and in processes and things. And so we had wanted to talk about that, photography in general and mass communication and journalism, just kind of an ongoing, regular, recurring feature. And we just haven't had time. Well, since Matt has, like I said, recently been laid off, he has a little time on his hands. So today's episode is the first installation of the Photo Mat Show. And if you are a old guy like me, you probably remember the Photo Mat booths. That's what we're kind of playing on, where you would drop off your film in a parking lot. And it looked a lot like a drug deal, I think. You'd pull up into a little booth, drop off an envelope, and skirt away, and then come back later and pick up another envelope. It was all kind of shady looking. But that shouldn't reflect on the good folks at Photomat. It was a fine company, I'm sure. Never really used them myself. They were kind of pricey. Anyway, so that's what we are going to be doing. Like I said, on a regular basis. Today is the first installation of that. We recorded at Tailgaters and Il Primo Pizza in Prescott Valley, Tailgater Sports Bar, where we sat back, enjoyed some good food, and then started yapping. So I hope you enjoy it. Now, the format of the show will be, again, Matt Hinshaw and myself, Matt Hinshaw of HinshawPhotography.com, and myself, MSantosPhotographer.com. We haven't really decided yet, and you'll hear us rambling about this as we discuss it at the very end, but it looks like what will happen is once a month or so, we'll get together and pick a topic and just start talking about it for a little bit, a few minutes in the show, maybe 20 minutes, half hour or so. And then the second half of the show will be answering listener questions. So if you have any questions about gear, about technique, about photography in general, photojournalism, mass comm, whatever you would like to send to us, if you're interested or curious about in our nearly 50 years between us of experience, please email us at info@milehighshow.com. Again, info@milehighshow.com. Use the word photo in the subject line and send over, and we'll read it on a future podcast. If you are interested in getting some critique or some advice on your work, whether that be sports, commercial, landscapes, portraiture, whatever, feel free to attach a file to that as well. Again, info@milehighshow.com, or you could use the contact us page at milehighshow.com. I'm not sure if you can attach a file to that. I'm not positive, so try it and find out. We will also be leaving you with a little homework at the end of the episodes to kind of get your creative juices flowing. Some tips and suggestions and a little project you can work on next time you're out and about with your camera. So listen in for that at the end, and we'll be doing that each time we talk as well. So sit back and enjoy. Again, Matt Hinshaw and Matt Santos with the Photomat Show on themilehighshow.com. Today's episode is brought to you by Audible, and this is a good time for you to get something for free. Go to milehighshow.com. Right at the bottom of the homepage, there's a banner for Audible. Click that and start your experience. You can choose from over 180,000 titles, audio titles, that you can choose one for free. You also get a free 30-day membership just by using the code MILEHIGH at checkout. Again, use that audible.com link at milehighshow.com for your free audio download. There's over 180,000 audio titles to choose from. And by using the code MILEHIGH at checkout, you get one for absolutely free along with a 30-day free trial. Now, you can cancel that trial anytime you want. And guess what? You do not have to return that audio title. You get to hold on to that and keep it for free. Lots of great books on there. I have recently downloaded what was it called? The Steve Martin book. Born Standing Up, A Comic's Life by Steve Martin, and I'm anxious to listen to that. We got a road trip planned pretty quick here in the next few weeks, so I'm going to be listening to it on the road. Born Standing Up, A Comic's Life by Steve Martin. If you want a little something, a little hitting a little closer to home on this episode, now there's several photo books on there, but try this on for size. At audible.com, you can take this as your free download. Stuff, Compulsive Hoarding and the Meaning of Things by Randy O. Frost and Gail Stecky. I don't know, I'm probably butchering that. Anyway, Stuff, Compulsive Hoarding and the Meaning of Things. What possesses someone to save every scrap of paper that's ever come into his home? What motivates them to hoard things? The reason I bring this up, have you ever seen Matt Hinshaw's garage? Enough said. Check out Stuff, Compulsive Hoarding, and the Meaning of Things for free at Audible by using the code MILEHIGH at checkout. You get a free download. Make it count. So sit back and enjoy. Again, email us your questions, your tips, your suggestions to info@milehighshow.com, and we may read that email on a future show. So this is episode 90. With the Photomats. Enjoy. So what's new, Mr. Matt?
Nothing.
Nothing at all? I hear you got a lot of free time on your hands.
Yep. Monday through Friday, Sunday through Saturday.
So you're working as much as you did before then?
Pretty much. Pretty much. I just sit at home, drink beers, play video games.
We'll be, you know, keep doing that. You can be a photo editor. No, you had a recent change in your normal routine that's freeing you up a little bit. How long were you with PNI?
Just shy of 9 years. November, it would have been 9 years.
A few months back, we sat and talked with Tom Hood, who used to be over there as well. You can find those at milehighshow.com in the archives there. But give a quick little recap of your history behind the camera.
Started out in high school. Fell in love with it in high school. Moved on to college at Arizona State. Started out as a computer science engineering major. Decided it wasn't for me. Switched to photography. Started working at the ASU student newspaper my first semester, maybe second semester of photography, not 100% sure. And fell in love with photojournalism, and that was that. I had to work in newspapers from then on.
Why'd you go, what prompted you to get into computer science to begin with?
I have a gift with computers, and I really enjoy and love technology. Always have, always yeah. will.
You're like that on the camera end too. Much more than I am.
I'm not too tech savvy on the cameras. I do pay attention to a lot of it, but a lot of the like yourself, I'm a little old school on some things. Like there's 12 different autofocus things nowadays, and I just keep it in the middle, and that's it. So you know,
I can't keep up. And then when I do, when I start looking at the different technology, it just...
Your head starts to hurt.
No, sort of. Not so much headache, but heartache, because I it's more stuff that I know I can't afford to get. And it's stuff that's fun to use, but at the same time, it's like, you know, I'm making a living doing what I'm doing with what I have. And it would be nice. There's a lot of stuff out there that would be nice to have, but you can never catch up. It changes daily, and you can't keep up with the latest and the greatest, so I would just continually be frustrated.
Yeah, well, neither can I. I mean, you know, my latest and greatest camera I've been using for over a year. I think it's about a year old now, give or take when it came out. Maybe a year and a half is the 7D Mark II. Yeah. And I still haven't even touched the credit card bill on that one.
Yeah.
So, you know... Personally, my opinion of the new camera technology and the real advantage for it is it's nice to get the faster frames per second. It's not a must. It's nice to get faster autofocus. That really, really helps a lot, but it's not a must. The must for me when it comes to getting new bodies, now we're not talking gear in general, we're talking just bodies, is the lower noise that comes off the sensors, because the processing that's going on in these cameras now is just incredible.
Yeah,
I mean, for instance, last night I was shooting the Rattlers versus the LA Kiss, and up until probably my second camera at the Courier, which was probably 2010, was a Nikon D700. I never touched anywhere near 6400 ISO. I just would not touch it because I knew it was just...
Start falling apart.
Yeah, garbage. I couldn't use it. Last night, I was shooting at 12,800.
Yeah.
Yes,
it's
I had to...
Body,
yes, I had 70. To use a little noise cleanup software, but, I mean, I was shooting at 3,000th of a second inside an arena. I mean, if you would have told me that even 3 years ago, I would have said you're lying.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest advantage for me is the low ISO.
That's part of the reason why you and I have been talking about doing this podcast for a number of months. Actually, since I started this thing back in 2014.
I was going to say, I think it's been more like years. Yeah.
Well, just before when I was starting to launch the Mile High Show back in the first episodes were in December of 2014. But in the prelim up to that, in the few months... When I was planning this from the get-go, you were one of the first folks I was talking to about this because yourself, you're an avid podcast listener.
Yes, I am
as well. I'm falling behind now, but I listen to, you know, several a week.
About the falling behind. I mean, I fully understand because there's just so much great content out there.
And we're going to get to that because that touches on again why we're doing this in the first place. But a year and a half, 2 years ago, when we started talking about doing this, the podcast that's been running, you and I talked about doing one based in photography and journalism and communication in general.
Yes, yes.
Something we both worked in for a number of years. But like you're saying, there's so much content out there. There's so many ways for people to get information, podcasting being just one of them. And then in that podcast listings, there's thousands upon thousands and thousands of really good shows out there.
Yeah, and let alone just photo shows as well. And, you know, there's some incredible ones that touch on the technical aspects, some that touch on the news aspects, some that are on the conversational aspects where, like, there's one, I don't know if you've heard of it, it's called the Candid Frame, where... Oh, you'd want to pause for a minute?
No, keep going. Hey, no, go ahead and close that out.
Close it?
Yeah, MSP.
Okay.
Yeah, we're go ahead, Matt. We're just gonna leave all this in. We're at Tailgaters, in Prescott Valley,
eating pizza and wings and ice cream sundae cupcake thing.
Go ahead. So, what are some of the photo ones that you are aware of?
One I like a lot. It's called the Candid Frame. I believe it's part of the TWIP network. TWIP is This Week in Photo. It started out as a single This Week in Photo podcast, and it's morphed into a whole, kind of like yourself, the Mile High Show is not just the Mile High Show podcast. You have a myriad of shows under you. And so it's the same way. It's morphed into these different – it's like a family of podcasts. Like, they have a street photography one, and they have a wedding photographer podcast and all this other stuff. Well, I like the Candid Frame, the gentleman that hosts that sits down and interviews iconic photographers of our time. I mean, you can go back and listen to some of his very first ones, and they're still relevant today because he just talks with people that are doing this and that are extremely successful.
Yeah.
And I just, from a photographer's standpoint, I really love that because I know all the technical. Yes, it's nice to hear the news and things, but hearing other people and what they do helps me grow as a photographer.
Yeah. I need to do more of that because I've got several photo ones queued up and saved, downloaded onto the computer and onto my phone that I haven't gotten to because I want to kind of binge listen to them. And I've read through some of the reviews, some of the photographers that have been interviewed are people that I've known that I've crossed paths with, so I want to kind of hit those first. But there's just so much content out there, and that goes to another reason why we wanted to originally sit down, you and I, and talk, because we wanted to get into how media in general has changed over the years. Talk about when you started. Like you said, you started in...
Now, professionally, or would you just say when I started shooting?
When you started dealing with media at all. Like, what was the first publication that you worked for?
Well, that would have been the
high school, or...?
No, I actually, that's... Well... That's an interesting one. I guess I would consider it personally the Arizona State newspaper, the State Press. I don't know if it's still independent, but when I was there, it was one of a handful of independent school newspapers. And what that means, being independent, is that we were completely free of the university. Yeah. We could say and do and put whatever we wanted in it like a normal, typical newspaper. Yeah. We did not have to cater to ASU. And believe me, they hated that. We almost got kicked off campus twice in my tenure there of 3 years or 2 years.
See, I didn't work for, but I did assignments for the Daily Californian, the Cal Berkeley paper, which seceded from the university long before I was associated with it. But when I was doing work for them, mainly sports and a couple of protest things back in 84. 84 is when my first assignment was. I was a high school student. It was the summer I graduated, so the summer 84. And then I continued to do some work for them throughout the late 80s.
Now, was that back when they were using separate, like the big 4x5s with Ouija?
No, it was
and
a box with a bird in it, and the bird had a chisel and a slate. No, I was shooting, let's see, back then I had F3s. I had one F3 high point shooting Nikon back then, but I also shot my all day everyday camera was an F2AS. And I also had a Nikon F that I used and an FM and an FM2. I had like six or seven bodies that I was using on a rotating basis, but the main one I was using was my F2AS.
And that's another
which
interesting
is still on my shelf.
That's another interesting topic to discuss is how maybe not so much this time, maybe we could do it later, but how it just the use of the bodies has changed so much in how we've shot even when I was shooting because I can, like, to get back on the topic of me considering my first publication when I was in high school, I didn't work for the yearbook. I didn't work for the student newspaper. I just took photo classes, which were leaps and bounds above what the yearbook was doing, because the yearbook would come to us in the photo club and ask us for our pictures, because we were doing the stuff that, you know, you've done for a large majority of your life. We were doing the high school sports stuff. Our photo club got the bid, because there you bid just like today, bid on the jobs, and we got the bid, the students. And so that's what I did. Being the president of the club, I went around with my teacher, and we did the setups, and we did the lighting, and we did the stuff like that. And the week before the yearbook was supposed to be put out, or not put out, but sent to presses, the yearbook came to me and my teacher and said, hey, we need all those pictures, and we need them now. I spent, with my buddy Mike, and that's now in Florida, spent two weekend days, a Saturday and a Sunday, in the dark room the whole day, printing out all those.
Yeah. You running away, kiddo?
Yeah, he's going with me.
Future photographer. He better not be.
He better
Anthony,
not be.
You like taking pictures? It's audio. You got to speak. That's my little 6-year-old.
I guess he's not going to speak.
My 6-year-old photographer at home who makes me proud and cry with sadness at the same time every time I see him pick up a camera because I know what he's in store for. You going to go play some games? You can go have fun? Okay. We'll be here waiting, buddy.
Have fun.
See you around campus. So, I started very similar doing yearbook and supplying yearbook photography to my high school paper way back, or yearbook and paper way back. But when were you born? What year were you born?
I don't want to make you cry. I mean, you're just going to sit here and you're going to get mad and you're going to start throwing stuff at me. No, put the drink down. Put it down, sir. I was born in 1981, October of 1981.
My sophomore year of high school. That's when I was sophomore year. I don't know. I can't count. But yeah, no, that's what I started doing, and it's a little different. It's changed a lot since I was doing that type of work. What? But back then, especially in a bigger metro area where I grew up, as opposed to where we're at now in the Prescott area, there were so many schools. We lived in a small town that had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 high schools in the one town, and
so
it was a small
pretty
town.
Pretty tiny.
Well, no, it was the reason being each neighborhood had its own high school. You didn't travel to go. Then in the neighboring city, which was about the same size as us, their school district only had one high school, and that was just a monster of a high school. It's huge, Logan.
See, that's like how I grew up. I grew up in a small town. But we had one high school for the entire town, so my graduating class was almost 1,000 people.
Back then, at least in that area, and I know it was like this in other parts of the country, in other parts it wasn't, but what I grew up with as far as the high school photo experience was there were photo studios that supplied things like school pictures, senior portraits. And in order to get those contracts and also include things like the prom, doing all the packages there, the memory mates, we used to call them, for like the sports teams and things. In order to get all the things that made the studio money, you kind of got that lock in to do senior portraits and things. You would have to then contribute to the school in some way, like yearbook wise. So what the studios would do, and I worked for a couple of them that basically had the same parent company. It was one guy who had started it, and then another guy had branched off. And I worked for the original guy and the guy that branched off. The service they would provide would send professional photographers to various games, whether it be homecoming, some of the major events, do candids around class, around campus, and then hit three or four or five sporting events of each team throughout the season, and then supply the yearbook class with those photographs. So basically, we are working photojournalists, sports photographers, and I started working for the guy when I was a sophomore in high school.
Boy, times have changed, well, haven't they?
And then, what he would also do, and this is how I hooked up with him, they would supply the yearbook class with all the photo paper, the chemicals, bulk film, and then they would train us. I was a student, I was a sophomore in high school. Jim Fashionel got the contract. He came to class, supplied us with all the photo supplies, and then trained us how to shoot. And there was three or four of us out of the dozen in the year, between the yearbook, newspaper, and photo classes, the guys that were real serious about it. There was about a dozen of us. Three or four of us he hired. So I would get paid in high school to go to other high schools and shoot the events that I was doing for assignment anyway. So it was a really good way to get a crash course in how to shoot fast, how to shoot good, and separate yourself from the other guys that were your age.
Now to go back on my experience, now this would have been late 90s, because I graduated high school in 2000. That probably makes you even sicker. But this would have been late 90s. We got very similar. It was the photo club, though. It was the club, the school's club. We got the contract, like I was saying earlier. But it wasn't like quite like yours. It was similar, but not quite like yours. We had the responsibility to photograph every single team sport. Now, that wasn't so much action. I wish it would have. That would have been so much fun. I could have gotten a start on my most known, you know, I guess what I'm most known for now. But we shot the team shots, and we shot them on a big medium format Pentax. I don't remember the model number, but I thought it was the coolest camera I'd ever saw. It looked just like the K1000 that I learned how to use.
Pentax 6x7.
But I wasn't sure if that was the model number or what. But yeah, it was a 6x7. Yeah. It looked just like a big SLR.
Yeah.
But it was a medium format. I thought that was so neat. But so we did all that stuff. And then part of the contract was, as we found out that weekend, we had to feed all those pictures to the yearbook.
Yeah.
And then we also had to do, or maybe not had to do is the right words, we got the contract for all the major dances.
Yeah.
Now, the smaller dances didn't have photographers, but there was like the winter ball, there was like prom and stuff like that. And we're talking a bunch of high school kids. Yeah, we got that's how the photo club made money, and we made money that year for that club.
Yeah, we didn't have a photo club. We had our yearbook class was.
I don't know how
it
familiar
took place in the dark room. That's where the whole class.
Well, but we were separate than the yearbook class. The yearbook class was their own thing. This was separate. This was called. I assume the organization is still around. It was in Arizona, is where I went to high school. So it was called a VICA. It was. I don't remember what the VICA stands for, vocational industry something something. It was a way to learn how to do a skill in high school, much like, you know, how they have it like Chino, yeah, learning how to do greenhouses and cooking and stuff. Well, same thing down there. It was the same kind of group, but they had photography, they had auto shop, they had video production and photography, and that's what I went into.
Nice. Now, when... And again, it goes into...
Is this going to be a painful question?
No, it goes into how the industry's changed over the years.
Well,
and this is kind of like me being the old man complaining about back in the day, but I am a firm believer...
Get off my lawn!
Yeah, I am a firm believer that no matter what medium you're using to photograph, there's still some folks out there doing film... by and large, digital is what people are using now. There's a resurgence of people shooting a lot of Polaroid when they can pick it up. It's using it as an art form.
I believe they actually have... I'm not sure if it's Polaroid that's doing it, but there's a... I think it started as a Kickstarter where there's a organization that's doing something a lot like that, and you can go and buy the film in stores now.
Yeah.
So that's a big resurgence.
But this is old man crying foul, I think. I think everybody who is either looking at photography seriously as a hobby or and more importantly, anybody who's looking into it as a profession should go back and do some sort of work with film.
Oh, you have
and
to.
The reason, but they're not anymore. And the reason being is and kind of what we're talking about on this podcast. One of the things that it's generating, and we're hoping we get some more feedback. We got a little bit from listeners. If you have photo questions, photo tips that you're looking for, comments on your work, things like that, we encourage you to email it to info@milehighshow.com. And in the subject line, just list photo so we know where to go to. Again, info@milehighshow.com. Subject line photo. If you have any questions, if you're looking for advice, or if you want to critique of your work, we would be happy to do so, very constructively, of course. But
or
things,
you just haven't seen me around town and you want to tell me to, you know, get lost, please send that in too.
But one of the things that in a lot of the forums, and these are not like amateur forums, these are forums where so-called professionals are involved in, they're giving out tips that literally were covered in the first 2 weeks of freshman photo class. And people just aren't learning the basics, things like the relationship between shutter speed and aperture.
Well, I don't know how your high school photo classes went, but mine, you know, being in the 90s, digital was very, very infantile, if in existence at all, when I was taking the classes. And so I learned how to shoot on film. And I actually had, I'm not sure if they were weekly or if they were bi-weekly quizzes in my photo class, and the teacher would sit down, and on it would have a list of, like, it would just say F, and that's it. And you had to fill in all the apertures. And it would say ISO, and it would be a list of ISO. And you had to fill in all the ISOs. And or it'd be a list of.
I was before ISO, you know, was in existence.
Well, ISO, ASA, it's the same. It's the same thing. You know what I mean?
No, that's what I'm saying.
I've just gotten so used to saying ISO. That's what I say. I don't say ASA. Yeah.
And I can't get away from that because that's what it was called when I was there. I remember when it became, or when ISO first was getting in the forefront. It never took in my head. It's just odd. But yeah, learning the difference of what those things are and what the relationship between depth of field and f-stop, things like that.
And we would have to do, write all of them, all the shutter speeds, all the apertures, and all the ASA or ISI numbers, ISO numbers. We would have to write all those down, and then we would have like questions on how to properly expose and to get this effect or to get this effect. And it was all handwritten exam. And that was a bi-weekly quiz. I mean, I bet you we could go to half of the people that call themselves pros today and ask them to rattle off the most common ISOs, and they don't understand that when you say 100 and then you say 160, yes, that's an ISO in a digital camera. Not necessarily true when it comes to film and in the real world. It's actually a third of a stop.
Yeah.
And
how do you get certain, like you're saying, certain effects, whether it be shallow or deep depth of field, all that good stuff. I think it needs to be reinstituted. I think people really need to learn that stuff because what it does is then allows you to use your mind as part of the art form instead of just firing things off and getting things hit and miss.
Well, you want to know one that I think, to get back on the topic of why we, obviously you and I are in agreement, why someone should start out with film. I think one of the biggest benefits to starting with film is not having that screen in the back of your camera.
Yeah.
You have to trust that you got the exposure correct, and then, you know, how we did it was we got to go and develop the film in a darkroom, and then we got to see if we screwed up or not. And
you don't,
believe
you don't have,
me,
you have a camera with you, do you?
No, I don't.
No,
I don't.
Mine's in the car.
And believe me, there was a few times where I thought I hit the back of my film on accident when I was loading it, or I did something, or I hit the door or something, and I went and I shot an entire ASU game. Because even when I was at the ASU student newspaper, we were shooting film because digital was just coming out, but we couldn't afford those cameras. So we're students. The paper couldn't afford it. And so I shot an entire ASU college football game for print for the next coming paper, which would have been Monday because we didn't print on Sunday, obviously. No students on campus. Shot the entire thing, and multiple rolls, two out of my three rolls were completely blank because I hit the door. I mean, you don't get that experience in digital. You know what I mean? I'll put it this way. I never made that mistake again. You know?
One of the things that I learned from my one of my early mentors, Jim Fashionell, I talked about him on an earlier podcast, was that Jim was for lack of a better term, a worrywart. He always had... If he needed two of something, he brought four. If he needed one of something, he brought three. Because you never knew what was going to go wrong. He had, obviously we had back then with the film cameras we were using, there were no the ones I had no auto mode. They were strictly manual.
Yeah,
there was manual focus.
That's what I learned.
I had no manual. I didn't have an automatic focus until I went digital back in... 05. I didn't own an autofocus camera until 05. Everything I shot was on manual. I still have to push myself to use any of the automated features in the cameras I use. They come in handy. They're way smarter than I am, but it's just ingrained in me. I have to, whereas some people have to remind themselves to go to manual or go to a different setting on their camera, I have to do the opposite. I have to remind myself to go to an automated function. And one of the reasons that I like that is one of the little tips Jim used to do for us to get us to understand things like ISO and shutter speed and aperture, he would take the batteries out of our camera. Now, in those old cameras, the only thing the batteries used or operated was
light
the light meter.
Yeah.
So he would take them out, and we would walk into a place, and he'd go, okay, what's your exposure? And we would have to shoot, and we'd shoot a roll, and if we'd bracket, of course, to see, making notes of, you know, frames 1 through 3 were at this setting, 4 through 6 were this. And we would shoot. We used to use a lot of bulk roll film. So we would have little short rolls of 12, 24 exposures, take notes, and he would take us into a classroom. Or he would take us into his studio or out back or go to a ball game. And he would say, okay, what's your exposure? Shoot a few frames at this, shoot a few frames at that. And with no light meter, and it got to the point where you could walk into a place and know exactly what to shoot at. You know what to set your cameras at without consulting your light meter, without utilizing any type of automated system. And to this day, I can walk into a place... And VPN was the film that we used. Color, Tri-X, later to be called T-Max 400, was the black and white we used. And I could walk in and go, okay, at 160, that was the VPN speed. At 160, it's this exposure. At Tri-X, it's this exposure. And I'll tell you right now where we're sitting at tailgaters, we are at F4, 1/25 of a second at ASA 400. And I'll tell you that's exactly what your face is at right now. I can walk in and tell
you. But nobody wants you photographing my face, that's for sure.
And we got to the same point with strobes in the studio. And Matt, if you've ever paid attention, I don't know if you noticed this, my wife does. When we walk in to do a shoot and we're setting up and we set up the lights, you've kind of got a generalized setup that you're using for any particular thing. You know, if you're doing overhead product. Or, family portraits or head and shoulders portraits, things like that. There's kind of a general starting point that you do. I have a flash meter. Haven't used it in years. With digital, you don't really need it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't even own one.
Back then.
I wanted one at one point.
With Polaroid, you would do your tests with, throw a Polaroid back on your studio camera.
4x5 or whatever it is.
What I would do is I would put my hand where the subject is, fire it off, and I look at my hand. And within a stop, I can get where I'm at. And that's with my own lights or anybody else's. I just look at the way the light hits my hand. I've had that knack, and that comes from Jim Fashionelle saying, you can't use that flash meter. You need to be close before we'll let you do it. And he could tell, so we'd fire off a few.
And so you never got close, so you just, nope. just never used the flash meter.
Nope. I never needed to because I'm right on. I'm within a stop every single time. Every single time. And that goes with your Ellen Chromes,
yeah.
my Paul Buffs, my old Normans. It's because that's how we were trained. And if you weren't, you were cleaning the shop for while everybody else was having fun shooting. Yep, you weren't close. Go sweep.
Well, one of the things I was going to hit on, you were saying that he was a worrywart, that he had tons and tons of gear. I don't call that a worrywart. I know this is maybe a little naive to some people, but I was a Eagle Scout. I was a Boy Scout many years until I was, you know, high school, and then I, like everyone else, found girls and things like that. Actually, yeah, I do. My mom has it.
Girls.
Yeah, you're right. I still don't know what those are, but no, that was one of the mottos was to always be prepared. Yeah. So, you know, when I go, like even yesterday at the Rattler shoot, I have three bodies. If I could afford it, I'd have multiple pieces of 70 to 200s. I would have three of them if I could, but I don't. But I have probably almost like half a terabyte of memory cards on SanDisk and Compact Flash, because if a card tanks, you know, your client doesn't care. Your client does not care. You are paid to get the job done. Yeah. And if you can't get the job done, then you're not going to be working for that client anymore.
Yeah. I wanted to bring that up too, the way the industry has changed, why we would have multiple bodies. I, for a long time, I only shot prime lenses because back in the late 70s, early 80s, and throughout the 80s, zooms weren't that sharp. They weren't tack sharp unless you got into the real, real higher-end expensive ones, and we couldn't afford that.
In my opinion, they're still not quite as sharp as primes, but the cost difference is drastic. I can go and buy a 70-200 2.8 for, I don't know, what are they, 1500 new, something like that. If I wanted to get even just a handful of 2.8, I don't think they so much sell them in 2.8. They're more like 1.4s, 1s, 2s, stuff like that. But the equivalent quality of glass and elements will cost me three times that in primes, and that's only a handful of primes, maybe three or four. Why zooms are so prevalent, at least in our industry.
And back then, this especially if we were shooting for publication, you would have whatever you were shooting. Say, just for instance, let's throw out a football game. I'd have the F2AS with my 182.8, and because of the quality of the technology at the time, the quality of the film, you were getting a much better product by pushing either your Tri-X or when it came out, the T-Max, they had a 1600 that was pretty darn good in black and white. So that's what we shot our action on. We would sometimes do color. We'd crank up that 1600 Fuji. We had our own color lab, so we were able to do that. But for the most part, nighttime available light or indoor available light action sports, I had my F2AS with a 182.8. That was Nikon gear.
Mm-hmm.
That was my black and white long lens. Then I would have color on a wide angle, typically with a flash, in another body. And then I would have a third body with either slower sideline short lens black and white or short lens color on a third body. So typically two or three bodies was what you had to shoot with. Now, obviously, with digital, you can change your, you know, mid, for lack of a better term, mid-roll, mid-card. You can change your ISO. Obviously, you've got everything in color, and you can convert it to black and white if you wish.
I won't lie. Next to being able to see your image right away, when I first started shooting digital and I could change my ISO from one frame to the next, it was incredible.
Amazing.
I didn't have to shoot an entire roll at whatever and pull it and put in something else.
The big for me was color black and white.
Yeah.
And then when I was shooting for newspapers, we used all chrome.
Yeah.
So you had, and the chrome film was not forgiving. There wasn't
you didn't.
Yeah.
There's no in between.
So just the, I think one of the biggest changes in that technology has brought to professional photographers is that their chiropractic bills are probably a lot less. Because I don't know, man.
I mean, if it's a really, really big game, like say it's a playoff game or a championship game or something like that, and I'm shooting, you know, my equipment, I'll have three bodies if I can deal with it. And those 2.8 zooms are not light.
Yeah.
You know, but I understand what you're saying, but still, I'll have all three. Like, right, my typical setup right now, when I'm shooting action, and I still play with it, but it depends what I'm feeling like. But, you know, I'll have my 70 to 200, no problem. That's the money body. Yeah. You know, that's the one I'm making my money with. And then sometimes I'll go with, you know, my wide, and I'll put that on my 5D. And when I say wide, I mean it's wide. It's it's a full frame sensor.
Yeah.
So it'll be a 17, it'll be a 17. And I'll have my 17 to, I think it's 35 on that. But like the last night, I was shooting the wide for a while. And then I was like, you know, I'm going to change it up just for the heck of it. And I put on what you would typically consider a normal. It's a 28 to 70 millimeter.
Yeah.
And normal typically refers, for those of you that don't out there, typically refers to a 50 millimeter at 50 millimeters.
Yeah.
And so I pulled that out. And, you know, that was nice. But honestly, for the most part, if I'm shooting action, it's going to be the 70 to 200 or 300 if I have the money or more, you know.
Now, we're going to talk a little bit about equipment and answer a couple of questions that were sent in. There were several listeners who had sent in very similar questions, so we'll just round it about here. But the biggest Canon and Nikon. What do you like? We both talked about how you currently are shooting Canon. I am currently shooting Canon, but I grew up shooting Nikon. What's your preference and why?
Well, I've, as of recently, have dabbled in both worlds, and I had to bounce between both worlds pretty much almost my entire professional photojournalism career, because when I first got into this, I always told myself I am never going to work for a newspaper that is going to make me provide my own gear. Because let's just be honest, when it's snowing, when it's raining, when there's a rodeo going on, when there's a car accident, it doesn't matter. You have to be out in it. That is your job. And that is some abusive conditions to put equipment through on a daily basis. So every single newspaper I've worked for has always been old school. I say old school, that's because everybody shot Nikon in the professional world. It's probably going back 70s, 60s maybe. Nikon was the camera to have. Unless you could afford a Leica.
Yeah.
Nikon was the camera to have, and it necessarily wasn't the camera, it was the glass.
Yes.
They have incredible lenses. Now, that has, you know, their lenses are still great to this day, but the difference, in my personal opinion, is their bodies are not keeping up with Canons. But it depends on what you mean by keeping up. My most recent experience with a Nikon was a Nikon D750. Incredible camera, incredible ISO capabilities, beautiful image that came out of there, but I had a real hard time shooting sports with it. It's slow, and when I mean by slow, I mean the focusing was slow, the frames per second were slow, it just kind of dragged a little bit. But for, say, studio work or portraiture or landscapes, beautiful, beautiful camera, wonderful to use. But my main focus is and always kind of has been, for at least my journalism career, sports. That's, I don't know why. Maybe I've been told I'm pretty good at shooting it, but I always have been assigned to sports. Maybe it's because I tend to be a night owl, and a lot of sports take place at night, but I don't necessarily like sports. I like baseball, but I'm really good at shooting it. And so I always kind of tilted towards Canon, but that's not 100% true either. I started out shooting a Pentax in high school, but my first own personal film body that I bought was a Canon, and that was because my buddy talked me into it, saying, oh, you're gonna have to pick one or the other. And, you know, he let me play with his Canon, and I thought it was a great camera. So I got a Canon, and that's what I've been with ever since.
My first film, well, 35 millimeter film camera, I had some 120 and 620 cameras way back when, but my first 35 millimeter was a Canon Cornet rangefinder. Wish I had it now. They're pretty pricey on eBay. But I used it for lots of stuff throughout high school. And then I went, this is how I got my first higher end. And it wasn't super high end, but for a 50.
Stole out of a trunk of a car?
No, pretty close, though.
Oh.
Pretty close, though. My brother worked for a moving company. He was a mechanic. He was a big diesel mechanic. And then he would work weekends and nights to make extra money by helping him move. And they were cleaning out one of the trucks one day, and they found something. He didn't know what it was. It was a motor drive. And I want to say an MD-12.
See,
yeah, I don't know. It was a Pentax motor drive.
If that was today, they would be calling the FBI and the local police department.
They were sweeping out the back of this 40-foot truck, and there was junk and garbage and newspaper and old cardboard stuff. And this Pentax motor drive rolled out, and he, because I was taking pictures freshman or sophomore year, he brings it home and he goes, "Hey, can you use this?" And it looked in really good shape. So I went to the camera store, Denevi Camera in San Lorenzo, California, and I said, "What is this for?" And he goes, "It's for the ME Super, the Pentax ME Super." So I saved up my money and I bought a Pentax ME Super because I had a motor drive for it. And we had K1000s at school, so the lenses, I could use those lenses.
Yes,
and they were very inexpensive lenses, but they were built like tanks, those K1000 and lenses.
That's the exact camera that we had in high school.
Yeah.
Again, my photo professor, I don't know if he was, super old school, but same thing. We had, they were just tanks, and there was the equipment locker in the classroom in high school, and it was just packed with K1000s. Yeah.
But the first upper end 35 after that, ME Super literally wore itself out. My junior year of high school, I was working, like I said, I was working with Jim Fashionel, and he shot all Nikon. And he had, cabinets of glass and bodies and things that he made available to us, but of course we needed our own rig. So I got an FM2. And then I got one of his old Fs, which I still have. And then I bought a couple more FM2s. And then I bought an F3 off of him. And then over the years, bought other F3s. And that F2AS, I actually got it, the Alameda Camera Swap. Every Sunday morning at the old Park Street Hotel in Alameda, California, was the place to go. You would find everything from Hasselblads to old Polaroids, everything. And that was the place people went for used gear. It was basically eBay before the internet. It was a fantastic place to go, and I bought my F2AS there with a motor drive. And because I had access to that gear, I went Nikon, and that's what I used. But to answer my own question, Nikon or Canon, to me, it doesn't matter. I have a couple of old Canon film bodies. I've got several old Nikon bodies, film. I have a little point-and-shoot Sony digital that my son Anthony uses. I've got a couple of junk Canon EOSs laying around. I've got my cell phone. To me, it's not... I try not to get too hung up on the gear. I try and... it goes back to the old film days again of trying to just use whatever I have handy and using that to tell a story.
I think that probably is more the appropriate answer for just about everyone that does this at one level or another. Because if you're going to sit down and sell your equipment and switch to one or the other, you're going to take a massive loss, and you're going to put out quite a bit of money.
It's like when you're talking, vehicles.
Right.
You got the same argument, Chevy or Ford, Chevy or Ford. You know what?
Yes,
Chevy makes some great trucks. Ford makes some great trucks. They also both make garbage.
The other problem is when you sell your Chevy or Ford truck, you don't take the tires with you. When it comes to camera bodies, I also notice your front yard. You don't let go of cars either, so.
I don't let go of cameras either. But
that's where I was going is, the statement is, when I need a new body, I tend to stick to Canon because I already have my lineup of glass.
Exactly.
I see on the forums such as, you know, not to name names, but Sports Shooter and things. Sports Shooter used to be the place for photojournalists. Yes, it was called Sports Shooter, but just about every single photojournalist in the world went there and talked because yeah. it was started and ran by Robert Hanashiro from USA Today. And big time guy, big time photojournalist. But anyways, and I would see guys that would sell every single one of their pieces. Yeah, clean house and switch and then be like, oh, why the hell did I switch? Yeah. And oh, God, this body isn't that good. Or they switch and then Canon's new one comes out.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, man, and it's better than the Nikon that just came out or whatever. And so honestly, yeah, they both make incredibly great cameras, especially today, and the differences between them aren't drastic enough to make me want to sell everything and switch.
And there's the thing. If you are shooting a high-end commercial or making your living as a photographer and you need to produce images to reach that level, you're going to have some preferences. But for the most part, I would say 98% of the camera-buying public are weekend shooters.
Yeah.
Or people who are hobbyists or family shooting pictures of their family. That person is not going to know the difference and nor need to know the difference.
Well, and another real interesting one that we haven't touched on that my buddy Sharky James over at the Petapixel podcast will jump down my throat if I don't mention, but there's a sleeping giant that's coming down the pipeline that is getting ready to upset the world, and it already seems like it's happening, is Sony.
Yeah.
Sony's mirrorless cameras are blowing everyone out of the water, and you got to understand, it's not so much just the camera. They have a major player making glass for them, and guess who makes Nikon and Canon's sensors that go in their cameras? It's not Nikon and Canon, it's Sony.
Yeah,
it's gonna, you know, if I had the money to be looking for
camera gear.
If I had the money, I would have a mirrorless. It would not be my main body just because I'm familiar with what I have and I have my glass and things and my 2.8s and stuff like that. But if I could, I would have a Sony body that I would take with me everywhere. And even maybe take it as one hanging around my neck for, you know, candids and things.
Now,
but
for the
I don't
most
have a spare $1,000 anymore. Yeah.
For the most part, the several emails that we got are from folks who listen to the show, so thank you, who are hobbyists. They're folks in this area who are looking to purchase a camera for their spouse or maybe their kids, and they want something that they can grow with. And this, correct me if I'm wrong, and I know you have some opinions on this, Matt.
Uh-oh.
Those are the ones that are asking for the most part of, you know, hey, what do you like? Canon, Nikon, you know. My suggestion is if you have the ability to do so, go with a DSLR. And there's a couple of reasons for that. Especially if this is for somebody who's either a student photographer or a spouse or yourself who is really wants to be a little more serious other than just a point and shoot. Because quite frankly, if all you're looking for is a point and shoot, use your cell phone.
Cost-effective than an iPhone or a Samsung Galaxy or an LG or whatever. I mean, they're all, like, everyone says the iPhone's the best, but they're all leaps and bounds beyond what I consider my first digital camera.
And
so
we'll get it. This is for another podcast when we talk about the megapixels, because everybody assumes higher megapixels, the better camera.
No, nope.
Not the case. We're going to talk about that in another one.
Yeah,
I don't want to
we could spend a whole show
what
talking
really
about
separates
that.
It, as you mentioned, is the glass.
Right.
That's what separated the lines before. And the glass, the lenses in cell phones now are pretty darn good.
It's still a piece of it's better than what it.
They're sharp.
It's better than what they used to be.
So anyway, that's a whole other thing. But if you are somebody, or if you yourself as the customer, or you're looking for a camera for a family member, friend, spouse, whatever, and you're looking for somebody who's kind of getting serious and wants to learn and expand with their photography, DSLR, and this is why.
Well,
because you have the option to easily, more easily than like a point and shoot or even some of the mirrorless, to learn what the f-stops, the shutter speeds and stuff. You can typically go full manual on a lot of that stuff.
Yeah,
and you can on some of the other ones, but the ease of doing it and the ease of changing your settings on a DSLR a little more user-friendly than some of the other ones.
For me, I think it would depend on the person who's asking me. I had a friend recently ask me, you know, I'm getting ready to go on this big trip, and I need a camera, and what would you recommend? Well, this person I know is going to be out and about, is going to be traveling. You carry a big SLR with you when you're out traveling. That's not good. And this, you know, this person knows how to shoot an SLR, has shot an SLR before. Granted, you know, I'm not going to say they're a professional.
But this is somebody who's buying a camera for a specific trip kind of thing.
Yes and no. I mean, you know, this person wants it for many different reasons and wants the highest quality and things like that. And, you know, I pushed them towards Sony mirrorless because I think that would be the way to go.
Nikon used to have was really nice and compact.
It was great except for the, you know. Anyways, the sensor was kind of drove me a little nuts on it. The sensor was about the size of my finger, my pinky nail, which
pretty
when
huge.
You blew it up, it, yeah. Well, when you blew it up, it kind of fell apart.
Yeah.
But if it was bright sunlight, like I shot a few air shows and stuff like that, Luke and Davis Monthan with it, and it was fun. It was great, but you know, I probably wouldn't provide it for a client.
Yeah.
But online or myself, it's fine
for something to hang, put in your glove box or keep in your bag.
To go on the topic of SLR versus the mirrorless. To get a mirrorless where I can do all the things I want to do with it on the exterior, like when I mean exterior, I mean change the shutter speed in a roll of a dial, change the aperture and holding a button in a roll or something like that. That's one of the problems with the mirrorless is they've made them so compact is you have to go digging through menus to change basic things.
Like I said, the ones that were asking this through the email are because people are wanting to learn, either themselves or others are wanting to learn a little bit and expand their photo knowledge.
Right,
and that's why I was saying the DSLR.
And for the cost, you can get a digital SLR for the same price as a medium-grade mirrorless. Now, if you want to get a mirrorless that has all those controls on it, it's about the cost of a medium to really high-grade SLR. I mean, like some of the Sony ones that are higher-end mirrorless that have that ability are more expensive than the cameras I have now. They're wonderful, but starting out, I don't think you want to be doing that.
Now, for the entry level, and here is where I will stick my opinion in as far as the brand name, whether it be Pentax, who else is making Nikon,
well,
Canon,
Pentax,
who else is doing
Canon,
the DSLRs?
Nikon, Fuji has a couple digital SLRs. I don't know. I would probably stay away from them.
They have wonderful
mirrorless though.
Now, For the most part, for the consumer or the prosumer, somebody who's serious or wanting to get more serious about their photography, when you walk into the camera bar at Walmart, Best Buy, Costco, you're looking at basically
two
brands.
Kits,
you're
yeah.
looking at Nikon, you're looking at Canon. Now, this is where I will put my input in. I grew up mainly shooting Nikon for many, many years. I am now shooting almost exclusively Canon because that's what my all-day, everydays are as far as for professionally wise. But this is where I will state where I see the difference at the entry level. Now, I'm not talking when you're going in and buying the higher grade stuff, but when you're going in and, say, buying a kit, a starter kit on something, even if you're doing it online, Amazon, where you can use the Amazon link at milehighshow.com and support the show.
What was that web address again?
Milehighshow.com. Support the show, use that Amazon link. You're looking at basically two segments, Nikon and Canon, and this is where I think
they're
the
similarly
big
priced
is.
Too.
Similarly priced, excellent quality, nice size megapixels, good quality, good value. This is where I see a difference at the entry level, and I'm very clear on saying that. Entry level, when you buy an entry level DSLR from Canon, it's a beautiful body, user friendly, the video's nice, You get the same thing when you go Nikon.
There's a big difference, though.
The entry-level lenses on Canon are
garbage. They are.
The entry-level kit lenses that come with Nikon are really good. They're a little heftier.
They're not earth-shattering, but they're not plastic fantastics.
And they feel that you could physically feel the difference. Now,
yep.
Having said that, no, I'm not going to switch over what I have now because I can't afford to go through that whole thing. Now, if someone were to break into my house where I'm just starting my renter's insurance and steal everything and I was able to replace it all.
Just starting your renter's insurance as in Monday, tomorrow.
As in the day after my stuff disappears with a backdated receipt.
Well,
but no, those entry-level little kit 18 to 55 or whatever lenses that come with the Canons are junk. Now, they're upgrading a little bit. The last few years, the kit lenses. What's the one you got? Didn't you get one with your 70 or no?
No, I didn't. No, I typically just buy body only.
Yeah, but they're coming with something now that's pretty good. It's similar to my 28 to 105.
Yeah, it's something like that.
But it's nice.
It's like 18 to like. It's like 18 to 105 or something. I don't know. I'd have to look.
They're getting better, but you have to specify that in the kit.
Yeah, you have to pick the particular lenses.
Because other than that, those Canons leave a lot to be desired.
Well, if you go to one of these, you can go to Costco and Sam's Club and the big box stores and go get one. That's great. But if you use a photo retailer, I'm not going to name names. There's a few that I like personally, but I'm not going to name names.
B&H.
Yeah, B&H is probably my favorite. Adoram is fantastic. But go on there and pick. They'll have options on glass you can pick, and it will be similarly priced, maybe a little more, maybe a little less.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've pointed several former coworkers to cameras when they ask, and these are people that have nothing, have no experience. They've used the camera at work that is a really old camera that's falling apart that they really need to replace. There's two or three of them, but that's another story. I've pointed them to the Nikon D7200.
Yeah,
that is just an incredible entry-level camera. I mean, incredible. I know professionals and semi-professionals. Now, what I mean by semi-professionals, I mean guys that have Monday through Friday jobs and shoot on the weekends, but could shoot as a professional if they wanted to. They just prefer to raise their families comfortably. And so where they'll have...
My family's out on Glassford right now with a sign.
Hey, can you ask them to get me a little something, too? Can I go stand with them? But no, they'll have a D750 or heck, maybe even the top of the line. They'll have a D4.
B&H is real good about that.
But guess
what? You can custom make your kit.
But guess, you know, they might have the top of the line $5,000 body, and that's what they're using their 300 or 70 to 200 on. But they'll have a 70 to 200 lens, not to confuse people. And they'll have the D7200 body with the kit lens dangling around their neck to grab real quick in like a celebration or a quick shot, and they work beautifully
for that. I've got an old EOS with a kit lens, at this point it's a fifth, sixth body that I keep under the car seat. It's just there in case.
Everybody always, you know, thinks, and we're going to dispel this myth right now, the more you spend, the more you buy, the better you're going to be a photographer, and that's not true.
I will attest to that because all you have to do is look in my Pelican case and realize that is not factor.
It's not what you have, is what you can do with what you have.
And we're going to talk about that at a future episode. Matt, thanks for sitting in. We're getting a little long here.
Oh, yeah? So are we over an hour already?
Yeah, I don't know. We want to,
that's not good.
We want to remind everybody, if you have either questions you would like answered, comments on your own experience behind the lens, anything photo-related, info@milehighshow.com. Well, put photo in the subject line, or go to milehighshow.com and just hit the Contact Us page and send either Matt or Matt a question, comment, critique. Let us know why you enjoy photography. If you have some questions you'd like answered, or feel free. Attach some files, and we'll talk about them here on the podcast.
Send us your photos. We'll talk to them. We'll review them. You know, I don't want to jump the gun, but, you know, if it turns out that you guys, you know, really like this podcast and like what we're doing, email us that or text us if you have our phone numbers or whatever and tell us, you know, hey, listen to the podcast. It's wonderful. Yeah. Hey, it's garbage. Stop doing this. You know, go drive off
a
cliff.
Stop me. They've been telling me that for over a year. But what we want to do...
Contact us, and we might even get to the point where we'll have maybe a contest where you send in your portfolio once a week, and if you have the best question of the week, you send in the portfolio. Maybe we'll review your portfolio for you.
Yeah, all kinds of ways we can get you involved as an artist, as a listener, as a photographer. We're also we've been tossing this idea around for over a year,
at least a year,
and
maybe more.
We
want
to start inviting some of the photo folks that we know. Patrick Breen from the Republic has already said he'd like to be on. There's others out there, some guys that I know that are retired and have a lot of knowledge to impart. Some new up and comers. I tell you what, go to those archives, the past episodes, last week's. David Smith out of Chino Valley High School is an incredible photographer. I would like to get him on, and we can talk more about that. He was on the show last week with some of his buddies from Chino High.
I just feel that, you know, this maybe I'll get a little sappy here for a minute.
A little.
But
he's already crying.
I'm already crying, but that's the onions. Oh, wait, there was no onions on the pizza. It was all meat. I feel that, you know, the reason why Matt and I have been wanting to do this for so long, it's the photojournalist in us, because deep down when you get down to it, what does a photojournalist do? They tell other people's stories.
Yeah.
And this is our way to help you tell your story or tell other people's stories or tell your community stories or tell your family's stories. And if we can help you do that better, by all means, that helps me.
Yeah, and just we're kind of, this show's evolving as we go, and this is our pilot
run. First one.
This is our pilot run, but in my head, I'm kind of figuring out, and this is kind of the format that I'd like to go. First half of the show, kind of a general discussion about a topic. Today was just to reintroduce the audience to Matt. He is one of the most reoccurring guests on the show. He's been on... five times, something like that.
I think this is three or four.
No, you did Hood.
Star Wars, Hood.
Star
Wars. Batman, Superman. So this is before,
And
you really got to get more friends.
He comes
up seriously.
In conversation quite a bit, too. There's one podcast I never launched, and I have to dig it up.
Which one is that?
Sometimes when you're out of town, when Matt's out of town, I go over get his mail and... and mail a newspaper and take care of his dog, Boba Fett. And I went in there one day, and I did a podcast of his house.
See, I thought you did launch that
No,
one.
I didn't. It was too funny. It was. I'll have to dig that up. Maybe we'll use that
now,
an intro to this one.
Now, did you not launch it because you spent the first half hour of the podcast in the bathroom?
No, I was just laughing at what was in your refrigerator and in your toy cabinet with
beer.
All your dolls.
I was going to say, in the refrigerator, it's beer and like frozen pizza and
just
margaritas
dolls
and film
all over your house. But this
the
is,
appropriate term is action figure.
No, they're dolls. One of them was a blow up, but the
you went
the
in the wrong room there.
The first part of the show will be just a general discussion between us, and if we get a guest of a specific topic today, like I said, was just to reintroduce him. There are a couple that I'd like to get. Again, we touched on a little bit of the way the industry has changed, but I want to specifically talk in a future episode about the factors that are causing the industry to diminish.
And you mean photographers to lose their jobs of almost 9 years?
No. I was thinking about the garbage shooters that are out there.
Oh.
And we mentioned it came up in conversation about what gear and mm-hmm. what we'd like to use.
Uh-huh.
There are, quote unquote, I'm doing my little air quotes here, local professional photographers that we and you as listeners probably all know who are way more concerned about the piece of gear they're using than how to use it. And we won't mention any names, but These are folks who have been doing this for decades.
You're going to definitely have to get the shutter blur, because I know when we do one of those episodes, we're going to have to use that shutter to blur the names out.
There are a couple of trends in the industry that resurface their head every 10 or so years that, in my opinion, are killing the industry. We'll talk about that. We also want to talk about the future of the industry and how it's not only getting better and funner and some of that is in relation to technology, but also what we can do as photographers now. We talked a little bit about it with changing of ISO mid-roll, mid-card. There's also just on software that is just amazing and how fun it is, and we'll post some examples of that in those shows. So there's lots of topics we want to talk about.
Now, one I think would be fun to talk about, and that's hoping the FAA doesn't listen to this podcast.
Drones.
I don't like to use the word drone, you know, but that is one of my hobbies. Yeah. Is I am a remote control airplane pilot. I've been doing that since I was 12 years old. That's what I like to do for fun.
Nerd.
And yeah, I am a nerd. So that's another topic we will definitely be talking about.
So if you have an idea for a topic, please send it over. Again, info@milehighshow.com, or use the contact page at milehighshow.com. So the first part will be a general discussion of a topic. Then we'll get into answering some questions. And then this is what I'd like to have as a reoccurring closeout. We're going to leave you with a tip, or maybe, you know, how about this? We'll call it a homework. We'll leave you with a homework assignment, and then we would like you to send us examples of that. And this is going to be my homework assignment to you, the listener, kind of a tip, a suggestion, a homework for you to try. Now, in the days of film, 36 exposure was a big role. I had a couple of cameras that had bulk backs on it where you can put in multiple, you know, 50 feet of film. And then when we were self-rolling our bulk film, we'd just crank it till it wouldn't move. We'd get 40 shots, 50 shots in a roll. And that was huge. That was when you can let that motor drive fly. The age of digital with a 32 gig card, it's almost limitless, and that's how a lot of people find themselves falling into bad habits. They go, well, it's not going to cost me to develop it. I don't have to buy the film. So they will take 50 shots when they should be taking two or three. They'll take 1,000 shots when 50 may work. So this is my tip, my assignment to you as a listener, and I will do the same. And I'm going to challenge Matt to do the same.
Hey, I'm unemployed. I'm not taking no pictures.
On the next time you are out with your camera, if you have one laying around, and I do, I've got a couple of 8-megabyte cards. I've got some 256-megabyte cards. I'm going to take one of those and put them in one of my bodies. If you don't have a small card like that, just mentally limit yourself to 36 frames. Go somewhere where you would normally have your camera, and limit yourself to 36 frames. What that does is it reminds you way back, if you're old enough, and if not, it'll remind you of the History Channel, back when film was your limitation, when you didn't always have limitless frames to shoot. So you had to think before you pushed the shutter. You had to compose. You had to put some thought into the image before you fired it. And I'll put myself in there. I get lazy. I get sloppy when I'm just firing things off because I can. So, and I do this to myself periodically now. I'm trying to train my son to do this when he uses an old DSLR that I have laying around. I'll slap one of those small cards in, and he watches the frame count on the back go from 50 to 20, and he knows he's about to run out, and I'm not going to give him another card. So do that to yourself. Limit yourself to 36 exposures, 36 frames, and really think about what you're doing and what's coming through your viewfinder before you hit that shutter button. And see how that affects your photography, see how it affects your composition, your framing, and how it challenges your brain as an artist, and I will do the same. I will take an assignment that I have professionally, and I will strap an extra body to my shoulder and limit it to that body of 36 frames and see what that does to my creative juices, because that's ultimately what we're trying to do with this podcast, is encourage you to use your creativity in a visual form and have a good time doing it. Oh, and like we said, we're at Tailgaters in Prescott Valley on Glassford Hill, or right off of Glassford Hill. Tailgaters and El Primo Pizza is where we're recording today. And if you'd like, pop on through here and you can see a bunch of my old shots scattered about on the walls from hockey and football and other things. So, Matt, plug away. Where can folks find you online, well, social media, the web?
I'm a big fan of Instagram. Wonder why. It's all photographs all the time. And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Henshaw Photo, or my website is henshawphotography.com. It's just a portfolio site, but feel free if you have assignments, want to get in touch with me, whatever. I do have a contact form in there, or you can email me directly at matt@henshawphotography.com, and that's Henshaw with an I. Beyond that, I think, well, Arizona Rattlers. I'm the team photographer for the Arizona Rattlers, so that's ArizonaRattlers.com on there. And, yep, that's about all I got.
All right, and I am, of course, at MileHighShow.com. Once a week, talking in your ear. My photography website is msantosphotographer.com. Very important. I don't know if he's still around, but since I do a lot of work with the schools in the area, years ago I would give out my website and people wouldn't write it down and they would go to M. Santos Photography. And that was some guy in the Philippines taking pictures of what appeared to be underage models in bathing suits. And I would get curious looks from parents. It is msantosphotographer.com. There's links to my social media there as well, including our Facebook page, MSP.
And, oh, I got one of those too.
And Twitter and Instagram, both at msantos_photo. Send us your stuff, and we will talk about it.
Yeah, and I will have the challenge for next week.
Yeah,
we'll or whenever we do the
we'll
next show.
Out something.
I already got a couple ideas brewing.
Good, good, good. So send us your stuff, and I don't know. We didn't really think of a name.
I thought we agreed on Photo Matt, but the problem is nobody
knows what that is. Okay, this is where they may know it.
I was thinking two mats and a camera or something. I don't know.
Photo Matt, for those of you that are old enough to know, were little small, but if you don't remember, maybe you remember the 70s show, because one of the kids worked in a photo mat.
They're about the size of Portageons.
They were little tiny huts, like one-man huts in parking lots, where you would drive up, drop off your film, and then come back like a week later and pick up your developed pictures. But they were called photo mats with an F, F-O-T-O-M-A-T. So maybe we'll do photo. I don't know. We'll think of something.
We got to figure out something clever.
Email us your show.
Well, yeah, because we're both Matts and we're both photographers, so no swears. I'm trying to keep it clean. You notice? Did you notice? I haven't swore yet.
Haven't yet.
Maybe I should drop an F-bomb just for the heck of it.
And, oh, we're out of time.